Golf Smarter Premium number 571, published on December 20, 2016. PGA instructor John Kantarski says, stop trying to change your swing all by yourself.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, John.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate you having me on the show.
It is a pleasure to have you on because you have a unique perspective in the way that you teach, and I'm really fascinated by it. You are not only a specialist in left-handed golfers, you are a left-handed, lifelong left-handed golfer that uses that to your advantage in teaching, correct?
I do. I've always, growing up playing golf since I was about 12 years old, I really know what left-handers go through because I've been through it all. And not only in golf, but in other sports, but especially in golf, since being left-handed is such a rarity. It was difficult for me to learn the game, especially being someone so visual. So at a young age, I did crazy stuff to try to learn. Like, I'd watch the golf broadcasts in a mirror.
No.
Yeah. I would watch that. And then when we got a little more sophisticated in the later 80s and we had a VHS that you didn't need a trailer for, an actual camera you can actually carry one man, I would actually record tournaments and then I would watch them in a mirror. And then thank God now the technology allows us to flip players on our video system to a left or a right-handed. So maybe the barriers aren't as great nowadays, but back when I was 12, 13 years old, let's say in the early 80s, mid 80s, things were difficult. There weren't a whole lot of left-handed coaches. When I learned golf, my first lesson was at about 17 or 18 years old, and it was from a right-handed coach. And even that coach had a difficult time giving me a lesson because he had to switch all the terminology. He had to say, well, take your left. No, take your right. Take your right hand. And so it was very confusing. So invariably, I had to teach myself the game of golf, something that I would not recommend to anyone else. It takes way too much time. Way too much effort, and if you're above 20 years old, you probably don't have the time. So thank God I was right. A teenager with an awful lot of time on my hands. But so when I began teaching, and really I'd always had a higher percentage of left-handed people, I guess because they would, when the clubs I'd worked at, they'd see me play, or hey, I want to get a lesson from him, and they may have never gotten a lesson before because they never felt comfortable with a righty. So I've always had a higher percentage, I guess, than most, but over the last few years teaching with Hank Haney, I've definitely made it a focus. And everything I put out, I try to put out in a lefty and a righty version as well. So I'm very sensitive to that.
And we all know the story of Phil Mickelson, how he grew up watching his dad play, who was right-handed. So he's naturally right-handed, but he plays left-handed.
Imposter.
He's an imposter.
Yes.
He says, damn you! Oh, that's really interesting that that's what you consider him. He's just not a true lefty. He's just
faking it.
But he's doing quite well with it.
He is. He's doing quite well. And I don't know why anyone in the world would want to play left-handed golf if they didn't have to, but I guess he did because he took a mirror image type of image. And that's how I try to teach right-handers, right-handers that come to me. I always try to face them, obviously, and if I'm on the face-on view, and I try to kind of put myself in the position we're trying to or create the motion, and I try to have them mimic it. So my style, being left-handed, actually lends itself better to right-handers as well as left-handers too, because I can switch the terminology around very easily. I don't get
confused. You don't get caught up with that because that's your natural style. But I love the idea of doing instruction with people where you're mirroring them,
uh-huh.
And it makes it easier for both of you.
Yeah, well,
that's
it's
a great
in golf,
way to teach.
It's 60-30-10. 60% are visual learners, 30% kinesthetic, 10% auditory. So most of the time I could reach most people with that type of technique.
And you talk about watching golf in the mirror, which kind of makes sense. It's not that disconcerting, but I remember I've watched baseball in a mirror I don't know why. I think I was just watching a reflection of the TV, and it always freaked me out because it looked like they were running the third base. It looked like a little. It looked like, you know, like T-ball. It's like, no, you're going the wrong way. Oh, wait, it's in a mirror. Okay.
There, the mirror image concept would not work.
Not
well.
Work very well. Even with football, it's okay, but not baseball. but it definitely would work with golf, and it's a valuable lesson for a teacher who can articulate it, and it just seems it would be easier for you to do that. Now, the way I discovered you was through a chat going on at golfers on LinkedIn, and the suggested conversation was, what is the one piece of advice that you can give? And yours jumped out at me, and that's why I reached out to ask you to come onto the show. And you said that your piece of advice would be stop trying to change your swing all by yourself. Let's pursue that for a while, because there are so many people who think that, and I don't like to get into swing mechanics, and I don't want to get into a lot of swing mechanics, especially, boy, and it reminded me, you said, now I'm getting all over the place here, and that's my problem, but you said people are mostly, what, 60% visual learners?
Yes.
So we can talk about the value of YouTube and Golf Channel and if that really does help. But your advice is get yourself an instructor. Don't try to do it yourself.
Yes, and invariably, most people try it themselves and actually end up getting worse, a lot worse. And then they come to me and expect, well, you're starting with a blank slate. Well, not really. You've been trying to do it for 2, 1, 2, 8, 10 years by yourself. Now all of a sudden you want me to just sprinkle the dust and everything's fine and we're moving forward. I give out of maybe 800 lessons a year, I probably give a handful of single lessons. I don't give one lesson. I just don't. I give a minimum of 6. Because it's very important to understand how a motor pattern is created, how to establish a motor pattern, and how to repeat it, and how to retain it and make it permanent. And the problem that most people have is not the information that they're getting. The information's good. You know, whether it be a Stack and Tilt or a Hank Haney or a Jim McLean, it really doesn't matter. It's how do I acquire that and actually perform it myself. That's where the great discord becomes in golf instruction.
How do you make it repeatable?
Yes. How do I actually make this movement? How do I learn to make this movement? So a lot of my focus and a lot of the research in the past that I've done has actually been in motor skill learning and performance and kinesiology and how the mind works and how the body works. I'm not saying it's all mental. What I'm saying is, how do you acquire that motor skill? And there's a specific pattern or system that you have to follow. This is just how human beings learn. This is not mine. You know, this isn't John Kantarski's way to learn golf. This is just how humans learn in general. So when you have, let's say you're learning how to drive a car, okay? Well, you don't jump in the car, do you?
No.
No, you read the rules of the road, and you read all the rules and what they are, and then you watch the movies on cars crashing so it scares the heck out of you and all that other stuff. So step one is what? Learn concepts, okay? Mm-hmm. What do I need to do to make this golf ball go from here to there properly, okay? What do I need to do with my body to make it do that, okay? So that's just a concept. Level two is acquiring the concept. So now you might go in the parking lot in the car, and you might get in the car, and you might actually look at all the buttons and press the pedals and everything like that. And you may just drive around in a parking lot with an instructor next to you, correct? That's how just about everyone learns, right?
Yep.
Well, same thing with golf instruction. Training is acquiring. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to make movements, and you're using various ways to learn that, whether it's visual, whether you're feeling it, whether you're hearing it, video, it doesn't matter. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to make that motion. And when you make the correct motion, you have an instructor there to go, yes, that's right. No, don't jam on the brakes. You're going to make the car squeal. Okay, well, I won't do that next time. Okay, well, same thing with golf. No, don't Don't, you know, cup your wrist at the bottom of the swing. You'll hit behind the ball. Remember we talked about get your wrist flattened, you know, compress the ball, hit it first. Oh, okay, great. Okay, I won't do that again. The third step is practicing. You got to learn how to, once you've actually learned how to hit a golf ball halfway decent, you have to learn how to make the golf ball do certain things or aim your body or get a pre-shot routine, learn how to set up to it the same way every time. Hit a draw, hit a fade, hit it low, hit it high, hit your different clubs. That's what practicing is. And then finally, the fourth level is actually applying it or going to the golf course and performing the actual act of golf, which, as you know, is now it's course strategy. Now we're talking about where to tee up on the tee, what club to hit, what part of the green should I go to if I've got trouble, you know. So thousands of different scenarios there. And if you try to skip one of those steps, Fred, you're going to be in trouble. And that's what most people do. They go right to the practicing, or they don't know the proper drills or movements or actions to make. Therefore, they end up getting worse. And Hank Haney has got a great saying. He said this to me personally before and to all of us in meetings. He said, in golf, you're either getting better or you're getting worse.
Gee, thanks, Hank.
There's no in between. In other words, you're not staying level. If you're not trying to get better with some of those principles that I just mentioned, well, you're going to get worse. It's just a fact. So there's no middle ground here.
But why then do we, let's just say recreational golfers and golfers who would like to get better and try to dedicate ourselves but are not on the professional level, so we cannot play 10 hours a day and practice 7 days a week.
Sure.
Why do our scores pretty much plateau? It just seems from what I've witnessed, what I experienced, and what I the emails I receive, people get to a level and they just kind of stay where they are, and they you're going to have a 10 stroke swing from one round to the next, quite possibly.
Yeah.
You never
sure.
stay within two strokes of every single round, and you don't improve by two strokes every single round.
I have a perfect answer for you.
I love perfect.
Because the better you get and the more proficient you become, the more precise the feedback has to become, okay, and the more precise the practice and training has to become, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you had a 30 handicapper, I could drop 10 strokes in a series of lessons easily. Stop the slice, get the draw going, hit it solid, divot in front of the ball, all the good stuff we're looking for. Easy. If I want to get someone to go from 10 to 1, that's about 30 lessons. Why? Because the difference between, let's say, 75 and 72 is very minuscule. It might not even be anything in their swing. It might be a couple mistakes they're making on the golf course. It could be a small, tiny error.
You mean like a strategic error?
Yes, a strategic error, a pre-shot routine error, a mental error. And you need a coach that's there more often because the mistake is not glaringly obvious. Okay. When I walk the line, every so often, mistakes are very easy. Literally in one golf swing, I know exactly what someone's doing, why they're doing it, and what they can do to do it better. Now, most golf instructors are that way. It's like a pool player. When they get on a pool table, they can see the next five shots, right?
Absolutely.
Same thing here. I can see the next five lessons with that person that just hit a couple shots I just saw out of the corner of my eye. That's just from years of teaching, from gathering that eye. And it's very obvious when you're making a one-foot error over the top. When you swing the club inside, you come over the top, and that's anyone can see that. But the errors at a level, let's say, of a single-digit handicapper, or someone that shoots around par or it becomes very minute, and you have to be very precise, and you have to have a good eye for that. I guess that's why the guys on tour make a lot of money teaching, because those changes are very subtle, mostly mental, but they're very, very subtle.
Mm-hmm. But is it much easier for you as an instructor to go take somebody from a 90 to an 80 than it is to go from a 75 to a 72?
I guess it all depends on the student.
Or should I say 100 to a 90, you know, someone who's, you know, shooting barely breaking 100 to getting down to a 90, or from a 75 to a 72?
That's a great question. I would have to say, if all things are being equal, they had the equal amount of time to practice and equal amount of time to work on it and apply it. I would have to say probably the better player. But
it's more difficult to get a guy who's shooting in the 75 down to shooting regularly in a 72 from like, say he's a 3 and try to get him to scratch.
I would say that's, as opposed to 90 to 80, is that what you said?
Yeah, or 100 to 90. Yeah.
Or 100 to 90. I would say the 75 to 72 would be easier, just because the swings in their scores won't be so great. Someone that shoots 100 could shoot 120. Right. Someone that shoots 75 is not going to shoot 95. So I think it might be a little bit easier, but it's a great question. Again, it all comes down to how much time they have to practice, how they practice. Really depends on how you learn. It's not the mechanics so much as it's how efficient am I learning, and how thoughtful am I in my learning, and how disciplined am I in my learning. And really, we talk about score a lot. I mean, what I see, Fred, a lot of people that come here, there's really two types of golfers. One type of golfer just wants to hit the ball better. I would say that's probably 70%. 60 to 70% of the people come to me, score, not really that big of a deal. I just want to hit it better. I want to hit those one or two drives around that are just awesome. I want to hit a couple more greens around. I want to be able to chip a golf ball halfway decent. I want to hit it better.
Is that the guy that says, I want to be more consistent? Is that who that is?
Yes, that's who that guy is as well. And that's probably the number two or 1A and 1B would be consistent. I need to be more consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I always hear. Very, very few people come to me and say, I cannot stand shooting 80. I've got to shoot 72 or 75. Or I can't stand 90. I've got to get in the 70s. Very few people do that. So,
yeah,
we're looking at least here in Dallas-Fort Worth. I can't maybe speak for other areas of the country, but I could honestly say that more people derive enjoyment from the game by hitting the golf ball than actually scoring lower. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we've had conversations with Fred Shoemaker, and he talks about the fact that lower scores aren't going to make you happier. And that is something that, you know, he said that he spoke to 1,000 golf instructors and said, how many of you are happier because you have lower scores? And you know, nobody raises their hands. And it's golf. I mean, you still want to go lower. You still want to go lower. You still want to press yourself a little bit more.
Yeah, what's too low, really? So, I mean, if score is your issue, you know, you're going to be on tour, you're going to be trying to get on tour, you're being able to try to play for a living as an amateur, in tournament golf as an amateur. Otherwise, yes, most of the enjoyment comes from that, you know, perfectly struck iron shot that you saw up against the sky and hit inside your friend, and you got to, you know, give him a little bit of, you know, goad them on a little bit and laugh at them and say, hey, I got inside you. I mean, that's the pleasure for the average, you know, person. And that's, quite honestly, if that's your goal, I can teach it to you. I can teach you how to hit the golf ball better. I can teach you how to get rid of your slice.
You say, okay, now I may have missed it, but you said there are two types of golfers. One, the 60 to 70% of them are the player that wants to hit the ball better. And the second one, have we gotten there yet?
Second one is just the score.
Is worried about score. I see.
Yeah, just worried about score.
Oh, okay.
You could probably put maybe a third in there if someone just wants to hit longer. But generally, most people that want
really, that's yeah, everyone. That well, that's an equipment issue. They keep thinking it's an equipment, and I need a new ball, and I need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I need the newest white driver and the black driver and the large driver and, yes, everything else.
Especially when we know that it's the exact same driver as last year's, except it's a different color.
Yeah, I actually played up till last year, I played a TaylorMade R510.
Okay.
That's a 2003 model, and it was early 2010, and I was playing a seven-year-old driver, and it was every bit as good as anything that had come out. So,
yeah, well, I mean, yes, you should keep up with the fact that when they went to a larger head, and they went, you know, and you were able to get a different technology, but it's kind of leveled out since then. It's not that much different.
Well, the USG obviously puts the restrictions.
Exactly.
On,
how much more can you press it? You know, there's restrictions on where you can go.
Mostly cosmetic, so.
Yeah, yeah, definitely the colors. Interesting, the Hank Haney, you're Hank Haney certified?
I am.
And what does that mean?
Well, Hank Haney has a certification program that he started a couple of years ago.
Is it beyond just being a brand? You know, a guy who say, hey, I can put my name on you, you know, because people have heard of me because of, you know, I taught Tiger.
Well,
is it a specific method?
It is a specific method. You know, I guess if you want to be one of the best golf instructors in the world, I guess, you know, kind of the road to that goal is you need to be one of the best golf instructors, and you need to work at it. And just like anything, to be the best at anything, you've got to continually educate yourself. You have to continually work at your and ply your craft.
I'm sorry.
Tell them that I'm busy right now and I can't talk.
Yeah, I'll take a message.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Leave voicemail.
Yeah, I would say, getting back to the Hank Haney certification.
Yes, please.
That absolutely. Basically, what it is a program for people to just learn more about golf instruction, to become the best teacher that they can become. So just like learning how to play golf, you know, teachers that may be a PGA professional, may not be, maybe you're someone that just wants to learn how to teach golf and not necessarily in the PGA, you could still get a very good education through the six-level certification program that Hank Haney has. And so with it becomes a variety of different, you know, later this year in March, we'll have the Hank Haney Teach the Teacher, which is done every year, which really 40, 50, 60 people from around the country come in there and listen to Hank personally and a panel of his experts that he has in his stable talk about golf instruction, how to improve your golf instruction, how to sell it better, how to, you know, everything from marketing to techniques to juniors to how to teach kids and women and training aids and everything else. So if you want to be the best golf instructor you can be, you continually have to ply your craft. And that's what the Hank Haney certification system does.
And had you been certified by any other instructors or schools before you had done this program?
Well, back about 10 years ago, there was a company called Bogart Golf, which was a nationally, one of the first nationally franchised golf instruction companies. I was certified with them. I actually wrote the certification program, so I guess you could say I was certified with them. And I'm certified on a handful of different video systems and the Sam Putting Studio and a variety of different other gadgets sometimes and systems and techniques. But the Hank Haney system is definitely, you know, something to hang your hat on. He, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinion, he's one of the most renowned and well-known golf instruction brands in the world now, being open in China. He has worldwide locations, so he's a very well-known figure in golf instruction, and he knows an awful lot. So
definitely a brand. How long does it take to become Hank Haney certified?
The Hank Haney certified system is, it depends how many levels you want to go, but you know, as
it's kind of like a karate thing where you can go
maybe a little bit. You get your different color belt. Level one isn't terribly intimidating. It's, you know, we take some written tests. There's a rules test. There's a test on different techniques relating to the Haney way to teach. And then as you get into level two, now you have to start diagnosing students, you have to start doing written reports, you have to start doing your own videos, so obviously your communication skills have to be very good as a teacher. So it gets progressively harder and harder and harder to really, there's only maybe two or three golf instructors in the world that are level six.
Wow.
And a handful or maybe five or ten at level five. So it's very, very lofty to get to that fifth and sixth level, but each level you're learning something different, something more precise, and you're adding more tools to the toolbox, and that's really what it's all about for any instructor, I think.
And how far along have you gotten?
I'm level two.
Level two. Okay.
I'm level two.
And in that time that you went through one and two, did you have any aha moments? Was there a time in the instruction you just went, whoa, I never realized that?
Oh, sure.
Can you share that with us?
Yeah, you never, I guess, know it all. You're always learning, and that's, I guess, a golf instructor you want to try to get a lesson from, someone that doesn't think they know it all but knows a lot. Probably one of them, a couple of them, was understanding the swing plane. I never really understood the swing plane or what has to happen to get the golf club on the proper swing plane. And when I heard Hank kind of discuss it and go through it and explain it, and then obviously the directors at the world headquarters where I teach, you know, show me some techniques about it, then yes, there was an aha moment as far as the swing plane and how to acquire that, but also a lot of different techniques. I mean, there's a lot of golf instructors at the world headquarters that have been teaching the Haney system for 6, 8, 10 years. And I've learned an awful lot from them. And I hope they learn a little bit from me. I try to bring something to the table as well. But being around all those guys, you can't help but to get better. You're going to get better just through osmosis, through absorption.
Well, then conversely, especially if you feel like you've been able to contribute on that side, was there any time during your instruction where you were like, no, come on. You know, no, that doesn't make any sense. You're wrong.
Was there a particular, as far as if I had a conflict with the Haney method in the past, I would have to say it would be in the learning process.
How so?
That's probably where any conflict, if I were to have one, would be with the system, would be a little bit on how people acquire the skill. The Hank Haney method requires kind of a lot of movement. You moving the person, actually grabbing their club and their hands and their arms, or you know, their and actually moving them to kind of get them to feel that. And I think it's very useful at first, but I think it can be overdone, especially if you're a visual person. That's something that it's not going to be something you gravitate towards if you're a visual learner and I start moving you. So to say that you have to move someone, I think is probably not 100% truth. It is useful definitely with kinesthetic people and with at the start, in the very beginning, you're trying to introduce a skill, but after that, it may become kind of useless and counterproductive. So yeah, it with some students it is helpful.
Yeah,
it certainly is helpful to actually have me move them. But I've had more people go, "Can you show me that again?" As opposed to, "Can you move me again? Hey, grab my arms."
That's so true.
Grab my club and move me, please.
So so then we come back to the 60% visual learners. Are tools like the Golf Channel and YouTube, where there's an abundance of instructional videos on there, are they helpful for somebody who's trying to teach themselves or, you know, improve themselves? Or are they counterproductive in your perspective?
Well, sometimes I think they can be counterproductive. It helps from the standpoint that it basically gets them to understand what might be the correct way.
Mm.
And then it ends. So that's great. They get an understanding of what's the proper way. Tell me, does that hit a golf ball? Just plain understanding, does that make the golf ball go nice and straight and solid? No, it does not. Unfortunately, there's a few things that have to happen after that to actually do it, and that goes back to the four levels of learning a motor skill. They've just learned the concept. It's not game over. We're just getting started. Now, if I understand maybe what I need to do, now I need to go online or go, God forbid, the phone book and look up a golf instructor so I can get a lesson. And so maybe I can show them this. But the other thing, too, with most golfers trying to diagnose themselves, even if, you know, a lot of the technology is unbelievable. It's handheld now. We're using 1080p unbelievable amounts of clarity. Even if someone takes one of those, goes out, puts on a tripod, takes some video, looks at it, does all that stuff, it doesn't matter. You still got to know where to start. How do I start? Where do I go? What do I learn? Because knowing the cause and effect of the golf swing is the real key to great golf instruction. Is if I tell you to do one thing, that can fix three others.
Mm.
And if you don't know that one thing and you try to go fix the three others all separately, you've just wasted your time. And you've turned a simple skill or let's say a simple endeavor into a monumental project. Okay? Case in point. Probably 60-70% of the golfers that come to me cast the club, release too early. Okay? It's just they come in, they hit the ball thin, their swing shallows out behind the ball, and they either hit it fat or they pick it. They never hit the center of the club. They don't lean the shaft forward. They don't compress the golf ball into the ground, okay? And their left wrist, if they're right-handed, is cupped. It's not flat and rotating through impact. That's probably 60% of the golfers that come to me. Invariably causes a slice and bad impact. What happens usually is people end up kind of hanging back on their right side and they get a little bit of reverse C and they don't get very good weight shift and things like that. By simply working with them to get their left wrist flat or even a little bowed, to keep it hinged a little bit longer down there, to try to get the shaft leaning a little bit forward at impact, will actually make them shift their weight and actually get them to finish on their left side stronger. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't say anything. I didn't say get to your left side or shift your weight. Okay? I just simply said, get your hands in this position coming down. Feel this motion. We're going to keep working with it. Keep working with it. Now, here's the concept of good impact. Your wrist has to be in this position if you want the golf ball to respond this way. And by performing that, and I've got millions of drills to learn that because I've had to make up a bunch over the years because it's so prevalent. When they start making that good impact, it's shocking. Their hips start shifting. Their weight gets stacked over their left side. They finish, right up over their left leg if they're righty. And they're going, wow. But wait, I just fixed three things or two other things by just working on one thing. Okay? But if you were the average golfer and you had a video there and you said, God, I'm not shifting my weight. I'm not getting to my left side. I don't care how much you try to shift your weight or get to your left side. If you don't know what your wrists, how they have to move down in the impact zone and what position the club's got to be in, you're still going to hit it bad.
Mm.
So now you're working on two things that aren't going to get you any better. Why not work on one thing and make three things better? That's efficiency. That's what you get when you go to a golf instructor. When you go with yourself, the learning curve is so much greater because it's not their profession. Maybe they're an accountant. Maybe they're an auto mechanic. I don't go into the auto mechanic and go in and say, you know what, I think it's the crankshaft so-and-so and da-da-da-da. I mean, I'm just like, it's making this noise or it's doing this. Have at it. Go ahead. Fix it.
I once was at an auto mechanic, and he had a sign on the door that said, "It's our rates are, 50 bucks an hour, 70 bucks an hour if you watch, and 100 bucks an hour if you make a suggestion."
I am going to go out and get that sign as this interview concludes. I want you to email that to me, because God knows I'll forget. But, very much like the parable, the story I've heard of the very wealthy man, millionaire home, a $4 or $5 million home. Middle of the night, the pipes burst. And water all over this, marble floor, and it's coming in, and it's going crazy. So it's 2 in the morning. Yeah, it's flooding. Well, he doesn't know who to call, so he calls a plumber. He says, hey, I just had a pipe, break or whatever, or it's leaking or something. My entire bathroom is, my beautiful, huge bathroom is being soaked, and my whole entire house might be soaked. I don't know what to do. Okay, I'll be right over. He comes over, kind of looks at it, kind of tilts his head a little bit. The guy's going, hurry, hurry. Okay, takes out a hammer, taps it a few times here, a few times there, leak stops. He goes, wow, that's fantastic. You stopped the leak. He goes, yeah. I go, all right, how much do I owe you? That'd be $500. $500? That's robbery. He says, well, actually, it's not. It's $50 for the call, and it's $450 for my expertise to know where to hit it on the pipe. Hmm. It makes sense.
Makes total sense.
Makes total sense. When I heard that, I said, that's kind of that's golf instruction.
John, thanks so much for being on Golf Smarter Podcast. We really appreciate it and appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate you having me on, and good luck.
So for premium subscribers who don't read the show notes, last week I included a link to a new Golf Smarter TV video, but this week I want everyone to be aware of its existence. Now, a couple weeks ago, I spent a week with my wife on Riviera Maya, which is the Caribbean side of Mexico, south of Cancun. The weather was spectacular, and the ocean water was pretty warm, and the pool wasn't too bad either. We stayed at the Vendata Resort, which includes 5 hotels, 14 restaurants, a Cirque du Soleil theater, and an 18-hole Nicholas Design course that's par 54. Now, don't let the par 54 part fool you. These are 18 very difficult holes with a lot of water and a lot of length. But I didn't care, so I was being arrogant, going, oh, 18 holes, par 3, sure, I'll play from the black tees. Not a good idea. I'm not good enough to play the black tees. Plus, I don't really enjoy playing the long tees, but they're par 3s, right? Anyway, there's no rating or slope for this course called El Manglar, but there's actually one hole that is par 3, 276 yards over water. There are also many holes that are over 190 yards. Frankly, it was one of the most difficult golf courses I've ever played, and that includes Pebble Beach and Bandon Dunes. Now, the reason I'm not going to turn this into a podcast episode, though, is because my interview with the course general manager, a woman named Rocio Robles, doesn't speak English that well, and it's much easier to understand her when you're watching her speak versus just trying to listen. So I'm gonna save you from that, but I do invite you to go watch it. Also, during the video, I cut back and forth from the interview to segments that I shot during the round at various holes, including number 17 that had a bunker right in the middle of the green. You got to see this one. Anyway, please subscribe to Golf Smarter TV on YouTube to get the notices of every new video that gets published. Or, of course, you can just go to golfsmarter.com and watch the video there. Now, I'll include the link to the show notes in today's episode so you can go directly to the YouTube channel. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.